I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Welcome back to the Regional Roundup. The Pew Center for Arts and Heritage is, in its own words, dedicated to fostering a vibrant cultural community in Greater Philadelphia. And every year, the center announces a series of grants to support the region's artists and cultural organizations. Among those chosen to receive a fellowship grant this year is Philadelphia poet Ara D. Matthews, author of the collection Simulacra and winner of the 2016 Yale Series of Younger Poets. Matthews is an assistant professor of creative writing at Bryn Mawr College, and she joins us now in the Regional Roundup. So nice to have you with us, Ara.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And our congratulations.
Thank you. I'm really excited.
I was going to say, tell us about the Pew Center grant and what this means to artists such as yourself.
Well, I mean, one of the things with artistry is that often it goes unnoticed. And the opportunity to be noticed in your field, or at least to be acknowledged in your field, is a huge boon for many artists. We create usually in isolation and with some degree of insularity, and our voice, our kind of inner voice, is the one that tells us that the work is okay and that the work should go forward. And sometimes it's nice to get outside validation and affirmation of how you spend your life, you know, and that's what the Pew is offering, this outside validation for the choices that I've made to be an artist and to be a writer. It's tremendous for me and for many others.
So this is from the Pew Center for Arts and Heritage website. Quote, aware of the challenges artists and institutions are now facing, we are humbled and inspired by their efforts to persevere and adapt to the conditions of a global pandemic. How has the pandemic affected or even shaped your work, if it has?
Tremendously, actually. So much of what I try to do is, I care a lot about voices in my work. I care a lot about my own voice, but I also care a lot about the voices of my community, or the voices that are around me, both historical and contemporary. And being inside for these many months has made me kind of fine-tune my voice to hear from myself a little bit more, rather than listening to all of the voices around. I love persona work, and so it becomes a little less urgent when the voice that's inside your head or the voice that you hear is yours predominantly because of the degree of isolation that we're facing right now. But it also fine-tunes you to begin to think about how the world at large plays into our thoughts, our political identities, how it plays into the work, and to think a little bit more closely about the autobiographical I. We are all people that are living in an unprecedented time, in a very political time. And then what does that mean for the work? How does that come through in the work? So you may have had one idea about the direction that you were taking with the work, but the pandemic made many people, many artists, do an about-face and turn their attentions to other things that were more pressing. Including these ideas of isolation, ideas of what the political moment means. What voice does the poet have in this political moment? And, you know, you begin to think of some of the great poets from Eastern European countries who were faced with great tumult and turmoil in their political landscapes and how they worked their way through it. So I've begun to, you know, read Russian authors and Polish poets and to be understanding of their environments and how their environments shape their work. And I'm very sensitive to that right now, thinking about the political culture, not just the I, but thinking about the I inside of the culture and how we face or how we determine to work through the issues of the day. And it's really in the work.
Let's take a look at some of your pre-pandemic work. Simulacrum means image or semblance of something, according to Webster's Dictionary. Simulacra is plural. Is this a good representation of the meaning of your collection entitled Simulacra?
Absolutely. My first book was Simulacra, was a combination of philosophical and literary influences. It had voices from Ludwig Wittgenstein to Jean Baudrillard, Anne Sexton, Gertrude Stein. The title of the book itself was borrowed from Baudrillard's concept of the simulacrum, which is kind of a social critical construct in the ways in which reality is constructed and simulated. And so I tried to adapt those concepts and create an alternate reality through intertextual dialogue. I had dialogues with Anne Sexton, dialogues with Gertrude Stein, And they served for me as markers of social comparison and critique, but they also helped me to develop my own voice. And I think the first book also does that. It helps you to develop your own voice, the way that you want to go forward in the world. And I learned that I am, for better or worse, kind of a composite of all the voices that have come before me. And how do I honor that in the work? And Simulacra was really a way to try and honor that while still telling in confessional mode about my own life.
I believe the poem Etymology is part of this collection. Ara, would you read it for us?
Sure. Etymology. Because my mother named me after a child, born still to a godmother I've never met, I took another way to be known, something easier to remember, inevitable to forget, something that rolls over the surface of thrush, because I grew tired of saying, no, it's pronounced. Now I'm tired of not conjuring that ghost I honor. Say it with me. Era. Rhymes with Sarah. Sarah from the Latin meaning a woman of high rank, which also means whenever I ask anyone to hold me in their mouth, I sound like what I almost am. Hear me out. I'm not a D or a river charging through working class towns where union folk cogwedge for plots and barely any house at all, where bosses mangle ethnic phonemes and nobody says one word because checks in the mail. So let's end this classist pretend where names don't matter and language is too heavy a lift. My E is silent, like most people should be. The consonant is sonorant, is a black woman, or one might say, the spine. I translate to wind in a country known for its iron, imply lioness of God in Jesus's tongue, mean apex predator free of known enemy, fierce enough to harm or fast enough to run. This truth from now until. The tongue has no wings to flee what syllables it fears. The mouth is no womb, has no right to consume what it did not make.
Pulling from the poem, my mother named me after a child born still to a godmother I've never met. Ara, it's a beautiful name, and yet there's a heaviness, it seems, in your ownership of it. I'm tired of not conjuring that ghost I honor. Is this close to the meaning, or am I off base?
No, you've nailed it. I mean, the meaning was that I had gone by my middle name for so long, my nickname, D, and adopted that middle name because I found it I found it confounding that people, first you look at my name and it's very difficult to pronounce, but I didn't want to make people feel bad about mispronouncing my name when you look at it, and it's almost a phonetic impossibility on the page because there's an extra vowel in there. And so I thought, oh, just call me D. For the longest time, when I first started poetry, I just went by D. Matthews. And then it occurred to me that I have this name that's full of history, that has a meaning, meanings that I've come to adopt over time, because when you become aware of your name, you may go to a name dictionary to figure out what it means. But I didn't. I just thought that it was a constructed name. It didn't mean anything. I had to make my own meaning. But I found meaning. I began to research language and understand, okay, my name means something in a language that I don't speak. But it also means something because it has some kind of historical weight to it. The way in which you were named is almost as important as the name itself. And I just kind of wanted to honor that, to think about it more closely. I actually wrote that while I was in Edinburgh, and I was kind of correcting people about how to pronounce my name all the time. And I thought, I don't want to make them feel bad, but then I also make myself feel bad when I'm not called what it is that I was named. And so, you know, how do you balance that? And you balance that through teaching and showing people what to call you. And that's what the poem really is it's a way to teach and to lend a hand in understanding the origin of my name and why I go by.
So just one more quick question on this line.
Of course.
Are considering the origin of your name, are you now able to carry the history more lightly?
I can. I think when I first found out that I was named for a child that my godmother that died shortly after being born, and my mother took the name from my godmother. The reason I'd never met my godmother is because my mother stole the name from my godmother. So, you know, it's loaded with history and conflict and all of that stuff. And so I just kind of, I can carry it more lightly because I think that even in the heaviness of our past, the heaviness of our received histories, there's still something, there's light inside of it. And the light for me is that when I became older, I realized that era means wind in Albanian. And I kind of like that. I love the connotation. Yes, that is exactly what I do. That is who I am. I shift as the wind shifts, and I believe myself to be powerful. And so I adopted that. I love the meaning, and I took it as my own. So I made the meaning as much as I inherited one.
So to the nuts and bolts, do you tell us about the process of starting with a blank screen or a piece of paper? Era, do you generally work because you feel the poem's already starting to form, the words for the most part flow, or is it a labor of love word by word and line by line?
I think some days it's a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. There are those poems that come to you in a dream, or they come to you instantly and you're like, that's a poem. And then you get these other poems that you labor with for years. In my case, I can work on a poem like as Walt Whitman did, where he did Leaves of Grass. He edited Leaves of Grass for years until his death even. And so, you know, thinking about how do you make the poem better? So you're constantly going back and revisiting your poems. And I can't work by inspiration. Otherwise, I would rarely work. So I just have to make it a labor of love and go in every day, try and write what I see, what I live, what I experience, what I see others experiencing and living, and then come back to it at some point and see where the poem or the direction of the writing might take this concept or this idea or this fragment or this nugget, and hone it. And that's really the work, is like not thinking that it comes out in one swift gust of inspiration, but knowing that it's a labor, and you kind of massage it and hew it over time. That's what I try and do.
So Era, 2 years ago, a young man named Wes Matthews was named Philadelphia's Youth Poet Laureate. Wes is your son. So as a mom and a fellow poet, it must have been a pretty incredible moment for you.
Oh, just absolutely incredible. I'm so proud of him. He's now at the University of Pennsylvania and studying anthropology, and he has an incredible mind and has always had an incredible mind. I remember when he was in it was actually probably late elementary school going into early middle school, and he just kind of picked up a dictionary and started looking up the meanings of words. And so he always had this love of language, and unlike my upbringing where I didn't really have books in the house, Wes always had books in the house everywhere. So he was picking up books and learning new things and writing about it and trying to see life not only through his eyes but through the eyes of others, without, you know, making it into not a tourist history, but trying to really pay homage to people and their unique experiences and his own. And he's turned into being just a wonderful poet and, like, more importantly, just an incredible human being. I'm really proud that he's my son, and I'm proud of all he's accomplished.
Poet Era D. Matthews is our guest. You are listening to the Regional Roundup on WHYY in Philadelphia. So, Era, you are an assistant professor of creative writing at Bryn Mawr College. What path do you recommend for students who are trying and maybe even struggling a bit to find their own particular voices?
Ah, that's a great...
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Good question. Live. I think the most important thing, more than calling yourself a poet or a writer, is to be able to live your experiences fully, like just being present in your own life and noticing things, starting with a journal, writing things down, reading everything all the time, a wide berth of reading, not just narrow reading of poems and not just narrow readings of fiction, but reading everything. That's where I try and, you know, instill a love of reading and a love of experience with my students, and helping them to see it's not just what you've lived so far, it's what you will live. So the poem is not just one piece of time, it transcends time. It's both past, present, and future, all of those things at once. And to try and think of, you know, their lives in that way, and to reflect back, to be present in the moment, but also to look ahead. and just honor every single bit of experience that they have. And what? Try and write it down, capture it. Be an archivist first, an archivist and a reader, and then you can be a poet.
What do you want people to take away from your work?
I just want them to take away a sense of ancestry and history. I care quite a bit about both. And then also to be able to think about how to play with forms. One of the things that's important in my work is my visual relationship to poems. I care a lot about what form looks like. I consider myself kind of in the school of the Black radical aesthetic. I care that that we're not thinking about poems kind of in this with a myopic view or monolithic view, and where it's just, it's got to be a certain way. It's either a sonnet or it's a villanelle. Or no, how do we create? We're constantly innovating. How do we create new forms and create new forces and rhythms inside of the poem? And how do we make those synthesize and reconcile in unexpected ways or even expected ways? So thinking about form is one of the things that is really important to me. And I try to be as wide-reaching as I possibly can and to think outside of the box, thinking about how poems can be code or thinking about how poems can be graphs or pictures, and really trying to translate that well. I'm always thinking about the poem beyond the page. Mm.
So we only have about 15 seconds left. Can you tell us what's next, what you're working on now?
I am working on my second book. It's called Mundane Gods. It's a series of palimpsests, or overwritten texts, told in three parts, and it basically explores the spatial and racial realities of the American underclass and working class.
All right. Thank you so much, Ara D. Matthews. It was really great to meet you.
Really great to meet you. Thank you for having me.
Ara D. Matthews is the recipient of a 2020 Pew Center Fellowship Grant and author of the collection Simulacra. And as always, we invite you to visit with us on social media. Simply head to whyy.org/radiotimes. Our engineer today has been Adam Staniszewski. Our producer is John Ahrens. And I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Thanks for joining us. Be well.